You're listening to IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind and Print Disabled. Welcome to the reading of Council Bluffs Daily Nonpareil for November 16th. I'm Josh Livingood from Drake University. Here's our first story. IWCC upgrades CNA lab for continuing education. Iowa Western Community College officials cut a ribbon Tuesday to celebrate the completion of a renovation of the CNA lab and loft hall. The loft hall lab is for continuing education students, while the CNA lab is in Stewart Hall and for most high school students taking classes at the college, according to Matt Mancuso, Executive Director of Economic and Workforce Development. With labor shortages in so many fields, it's good to see the college upgrading its facilities to better train some homegrown talent, said Drew Camp, President and CEO of the Council Bluffs Area Chamber of Commerce. We appreciate all you do for the community, he said. Last year, at about this time, we kind of looked at what the needs were in the community, and we heard CNA, and we heard nursing, Manusco said. The CNA isn't a high-dollar career, but it's a gateway to the nursing field. The renovation included remodeling cabinets, adding new countertops, adding and replacing sinks, and installing new equipment, according to Rhonda Kasson, who oversees health occupation classes offered in the continuing education department. She planned the renovation after talking to healthcare professionals in the community. The lab has a Hoyer lift, sit-to-stand chair scale, oxygen concentrator, and portable oxygen charts. The most exciting piece for me is the academic alliance we have put in place, she said. Rosie Connectively hardware was installed and paired with software from Point Click Care, Kasson said. The Rosie machines will link with Point Click Care patient charts via Bluetooth. This is a mimic of what students will learn and be oriented to if they were a new hire at a facility, she said. The combination was recommended by people at the area health facilities, Kasson said. We hope to use this software for CNA naturally, possibly with our medication aid students as well as mental health technicians and additional possibilities, she said. We are just in the beginning stages of learning all the offerings this point-click care provides. Manguso used the occasion to announce that the college would be launching a new mental health technician program designed by Kasson. It will include 40 hours of CNA training and 120 hours of mental health training, he said. The first 40 students will be able to go through the program with free tuition. There is a photo here of Matt Mancuso, Executive Director of Economic and Workforce Development at Iowa Western Community College, holding scissors, cuts a ribbon alongside CNA students, college officials, and CB ambassadors inside the renovated CNA lab in Loft Hall during the Council Bluffs Area Chamber of Commerce ribbon-cutting ceremony on Tuesday, November 15th, 2022. From left to right, certified nursing assistant student Melissa Miller and instructor Mary Pavel watch a CNA student Amy Kasson practices unconscious oral care at the hospital training inside the renovated CNA lab in Loft Hall at Iowa Western Community College following a Council Bluffs Area Chamber of Commerce ribbon cutting ceremony on Tuesday, November 15th, 2022. Our next story today is about Graceview Courtyard expanding. Construction has begun on addition to Emmanuel Community's Graceview Courtyard at 1681 College Road in Council Bluffs. The project will more than double the apartments at Graceview from 56 to 121, according to press release from Emmanuel. The three-story independent living facility, billed as an affordable 55-plus active living environment, opened in 2020. The building contains a community room, wellness center, and studio where residents can work on crafts, hobbies, or an on-site computer and printer. It's a great opportunity for seniors of the area, said Connie Chisholm, the director of communications for Emmanuel. Graceview Courtyard Phase 2 is an affirmation towards our commitment to developing affordable senior housing, said Eric Gurley, Emmanuel president and CEO.
Affordable senior housing continues to be in high demand throughout Nebraska and Iowa. Expanding our not-for-profit community in Council Bluffs will offer an area seniors more opportunities for affordable housing with the quality, service, and amenities Emmanuel is known for.
The expansion will add 65 apartments, more indoor common and service spaces, and additional outdoor living spaces, including walking paths, raised garden beds, and a bocce ball court, the press release stated. With the completion of the addition in late 2023, the facility will encompass 116,796 square feet and offer 121 one and two bedroom and efficiency units, and designed aligned with Emmanuel's commitment to the needs and well-being of seniors. Emmanuel owns and operates 14 retirement living communities in Omaha and Lincoln, Nebraska. In 2018, the organization acquired its first community in Iowa, the Shores in Pleasant Hill, just outside of Des Moines. Graceview Courtyards is the organization's second community in Iowa. Emmanuel Pathways Pace opened on North 16th Street in Council Bluffs in 2012, offers all-inclusive care for the elderly. The Council Bluffs facility served as the model for facilities that Emmanuel opened in Des Moines and as well as Omaha. Since 1887, Emmanuel has served aging adults in 16 independent living, assisted living, and long-term care retirement communities on 11 campuses. Emmanuel Pathways operates three PACE centers in Iowa and Nebraska. The Emmanuel Community Foundation, a resident assistance fund, provides financial assistance to independent living residents, and the Emmanuel Vision Foundation extends financial support to nonprofit charitable 501 organizations that share purpose and align with Emmanuel's service-centered mission. Learn more at emmanuel.com. There is a photo here of construction of the addition to Emmanuel Communities Graceview Courtyard at 1681 College Road in Council Bluffs, continued behind Graceview's initial structure on Tuesday, November 15th, 2022. The project will more than double the number of apartments at Graceview from 56 to 121, according to a press release from Emmanuel. The three-story independent living facility, billed as an affordable 55-plus activity living environment, opened in 2020. Our next story is about election results being certified. House District 20 recount expected. With the certification of the election results yesterday, Democrat Josh Turek officially became the state representative for Iowa House District 20. Turek received 7 votes more than his opponent, Republican Sarah Abduj. But with such a riser thin margin, Abduj is expected to submit paperwork today requesting a recount. According to the results certified by the Pottawatomie County Board of Supervisors on Tuesday, Turek received a total of 3,404 votes, while Abduj received 3,397. There was a 7 write-in votes, 91 undervotes, which means the voter didn't vote for either candidate, and 2 overvoters, which means the voter filled out their ballot for both candidates. Once Abduj files her request for recount, she and Turek will each select a proxy to participate in the recount. Abduj and Turek will then have to agree on a neutral third person to rebound the recount board. The physical counting of the ballots which includes all of the ballots cast on Election Day and all of the absentee ballots for District 20, will be done by 3 recount board members: Deputy County Auditor Christine Everett will oversee the recount, which she expects to take about a day to complete. Under Iowa law, the candidate who requests a recount is required to post a bond between $100 and $1,000 depending on what race is being challenged, but only if the margin of victory is greater than 1%. Because the difference in vote totals in this race is less than 1%, Abduch will not have to post a bond.
Governor Reynolds names new chief of staff.
Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds' chief of staff is moving on to lead the National Republican Governors Association, and her new chief of staff is a former official in former President Donald Trump's administration. Reynolds announced Tuesday that Chief of Staff Sarah Craig Gongnol is leaving for another role. Later Tuesday, the Republican Governors Association announced Craig Gongnol will become the organization's new executive director. Reynolds announced she is promoting Taryn Frenders, who is currently her chief operating officer, to chief of staff effective December 1st. The chief of staff position is incredibly demanding in normal times, but when you add a worldwide pandemic, a derecho, floods, and more on top of it, it is all-consuming, Reynolds said in a news release. Sarah devoted herself to this state and helped me usher in a bold agenda that will pay dividends for the years to come. I'm so grateful for her leadership and am excited for what's to come. Fritters, an attorney, has worked in the private sector as a staffer to U.S. Senator Joni Ernst in the U.S. State Department under Trump and as deputy to the U.S. ambassador to the United Nations. According to the Governor News release, she joined Reynolds' office in January 2021. She is a native of Denison and holds degrees from Drake University and the University of Iowa College of Law. Taryn has played a central role in my administration over the last 2 years as chief operating officer, and I'm thrilled for her to become my chief of staff, Reynolds said. Her experience at the federal level and her proven leadership skills will be a great asset as I begin my second full term. The Republican Governors Association is a political group that works to support and elect Republican candidates for governor across the country. Iowa Medicaid Honor. Efforts by the state to support Iowa Medicaid workers was recognized by the National Association of Medicaid Directors, according to a news release from Iowa Department of Health and Human Services. The national organization included Iowa in its Spotlight for Innovation Award in recognition of Iowa's critical efforts to implement new and creative ways to support their staff amid hiring shortages and Medicaid members' enrollment growth, the State Department said. Iowa is a shining example of what Medicaid agencies can accomplish when they have clear goals and dedication to creating the best programs possible, Diane Hasselman, Interim Executive Director of National Association of Medicaid Directors, said in news release. Workforce is a real challenge everywhere, and when you couple that with the unprecedented enrollment growth Medicaid has experienced, the challenges is compounded. Iowa found a way to make these challenges a benefit for their Medicaid members and model solution for the country. The state agency said it has focused on building a high-capacity team within the realities of a small staff and global workforce shortages. A modernized and more
cohesive workforce is key to achieving our Iowa Medicaid mission, vision, and values, and to reflect our direction from our federal partners. We've come a long way, and I am so proud to work alongside such dedicated and passionate team members who continue to improve Medicaid for our members and providers every day. Iowa Medicaid Director Elizabeth Matney said in a news release, Iowa, state settles with Walmart. Iowa was among the state that reached a $3.1 billion settlement with Walmart over allegations that the company contributed to opioid abuse by failing to properly monitor the dispensing of opioids at its stores. Iowa Attorney General Tom Miller's office announced. Iowa would receive nearly $20 million from the multi-state settlement, Miller's office said. While the settlement has been approved by a leadership group of attorneys general and attorney representatives, local governments, it must be approved by a total of 43 states. The Iowa Attorney General's office was one of the lead negotiators on the deal, the office said. Too many lives have been lost or devastated by the opioid epidemic, Miller said in the news release. My fellow attorneys, General, and I are holding accountable the companies that created and fueled this crisis. This deal with Walmart adds to the important progress we've already achieved through our settlements with opioid manufacturers and distributors. Miller's office said leaders in the negotiators are optimistic the settlement will be approved by the required 43 states by the end of this year, and the local governments will join the deal during the first quarter of the next year. By that time, Miller will no longer be Attorney General. The Democrat lost in last week's election to Republican Breonna Byrd. Face of the day, Katrina Traubel. The Community Foundation for Western Iowa continues its celebration of National Community Foundation Week, a celebration highlighting the far-reaching impact of over 800 community foundations in the United States. The Community Foundation continues to create durable, positive impact in our region and recently launched Share Iowa in its 9 county service area. This dynamic, engaging online tool helps nonprofit organizations communicate about events, encourage donations through Amazon wish lists, better engage volunteer opportunities, and provide an easy and flexible way to receive donations. To support the launch of Share Iowa and support the Community Foundation's larger footprint, we are excited to introduce Katrina Traubel in her role as Community Partnership Manager at the Community Foundation. Katrina works with nonprofit organizations and the community to amplify a culture of giving in Western Iowa. She helps provide resources and expertise while cultivating relationships with nonprofit partners in the Share Iowa network and manages the Community Foundation's impact grants process. Katrina, a lifelong resident of Trainer, loves how our communities and nonprofits are creating a culture of philanthropic impact throughout Western Iowa, and says, I am constantly amazed with the innovative and creative ideas people have to generate actions to enhance the communities we live in. Share Iowa is a key resource for our community members far and near to connect to causes and communities they are passionate about. In addition, the Community Foundation of Western Iowa, Share Iowa, is supported by other Iowa founders, including the Charles E. Lakin Foundation, Google, Iowa Council of Foundations, and the Iowa Western Foundation. The Community Foundation for Western Iowa works with individuals, families, businesses, nonprofits, and governmental entities to establish endowment funds and other philanthropic solutions that will benefit Western Iowa for future generations. Learn more at givewesterniowa.org. Scott County absentee recount underway Tuesday. A recount of absentee ballots is underway Tuesday in Scott County after a 470 vote discrepancy in absentee totals was found last week. Scott County Auditor Carrie Tompkins told a room full of observers, journalists, and election officials that the county is hoping to finish the partial recount by the end of the day and plans to post results online once finished and reconciled. Two close local races, one for a Davenport, Iowa House seat separated by 29 votes, and another for county recorder separated by 173 votes, could be affected by the recount, but it's not expected to affect statewide races. More than 23,000 absentee ballots filled 10 sealed boxes stacked in an upper floor room of the Scott County Administrative Building to be recounted Tuesday morning. Three members of County Elections Board opened the seal on the boxes and fed piles of ballots into machines. The whirring of ballots being counted served as background noise over the conversation of roughly 30 observers, including candidates of narrow races and political party members. Being counted were all of Scott County's absentee ballots, votes cast on satellite early voting locations at the county's auditor's office, ballots cast by mail from healthcare facilities, and from those stationed overseas. The Iowa Secretary of State tweeted late Thursday last week calling for a recount of Scott County's absentee votes total because of a tabulation error. Friday afternoon, Tompkins issued a press release that said an initial staff evaluation found a 470 ballot discrepancy in the vote totals. Tuesday morning, Tompkins told supervisors that 470 ballots weren't counted by the machines, but county staff weren't sure why. I can tell you that the number of envelopes that went into the room and the number of ballots that left the room match. The number that went through the machine does not, Tompkins said. I couldn't tell you if it was a machine that jammed and something happened, or if it were stacked ballots that unfortunately didn't make it through the machine, and that is why we're doing a recount. Tompkins said there were no immediate plans to do any by-hand recounting. Earlier Tuesday, Scott County supervisors anonymously approved conducting the recount, which was brought to a vote on advice from County Attorney Mike Walton. The supervisors will meet again Wednesday at 8 a.m. to vote to accept any changes in the results. Scott County Democrats critical of election handling. During the supervisors' meeting, Democrat supervisor and state representative-elect Ken Crocken criticized Tompkins' handling of the election. He pointed at the 470 ballot discrepancy as well as the indicant in which 47 voters in Davenport precinct were given the wrong ballots. In the latter, two races were affected, meaning those 47 voters weren't able to vote in an uncontested state Senate race, nor a state representative race where Crocken prevailed with more than 70% of the vote. There are 47 people who went to the polls intending to vote for their state senator and representative and who were denied the opportunity, Crocken said. Tompkins said the state guidance was to remake the 47 ballots, meaning the election workers of both parties filled out the voters' choices on new correct ballots and left the state representative and senator field blank. The voting machine rejected the original ballots. Tompkins said the incident was unfortunate, but it had been dealt with and didn't impact the competitive race. Asked whether those 47 voters were contacted, Tompkins told supervisors, "We are not able to match a ballot to a person once they get it into the machine or the person, that voter, walks away." Cindy Winkler, the unopposed Democrat candidate for Senate, is in the precinct, likewise argued that Tompkins should have notified the public of the error and made an effort to contact those 47 voters who were given the wrong ballot. Tompkins said voters left the precinct before election workers discovered the ballots had been rejected. Winkler also accused the Iowa Secretary of State's office of dispositive treatment in the way it has handling the ballot issued in Linn County. Where the county auditor's office anonymously left the election for a supervisor off the ballot in one precinct, affecting hundreds of ballots, Linn County Auditor Jill Miller is a Democrat who unsuccessfully ran against Republican Secretary of State Paul Pate in November 8th election. Winkler argues that Secretary of State office has been more lenient in its public statements of the Scott County ballot issue compared to the ballot issue in Linn County. It's different, even with the verbiage coming from Secretary of State, she said. It's not as tough or consistently critical as Scott County as they are of Linn County. Pate issued public statements on social media on the election, drawing attention to the chiding of Linn County Auditor's Office for a very serious oversight that has taken the ability of voters to make their voice heard on who their next county supervisor will be, but made no similar public statement about the ballots issued in Scott County. Pate tweeted, "Thanks to the checks and balances we have in place, we discovered an error in the tabulation of Scott County's absentee ballot numbers. I'm calling on the county to conduct an administrative recount ASAP. We will ensure the integrity of Iowa's elections is maintained." But the Secretary of State's office says it is sending both counties a letter of inquiry, the purpose of which is to get a report who alleged issues occur in the county, according to the office spokesperson. As it did in Linn County, the Iowa Secretary of State's office will send a letter of inquiry to the Scott County auditor about the absentee counting issue and has been in touch with Scott County Attorney and Iowa Attorney General, a spokesperson for the state office told the Cedar Rapids Gazette. Two Scott County races close. In two Scott County races, unofficial results released Tuesday night showed candidates were separated by a slim margin. In House District 81, representing the northwest quadrant of Davenport, Republican Luana Stoltenberg led Democratic Craig Cooper by 29 votes on election night. Neither is an incumbent lawmaker. Scott County Recorder Rita Vergas, a 20-year-old incumbent Democrat, was 173 votes ahead of her Republican challenger Michelle Darland on election night. Vergas was the only Democrat to prevail in a competitive race in Scott County, according to unofficial election night results. You're listening to Council Bluffs Daily Nonpareil for November 16th on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind and Print Disabled in Des Moines. I'm Josh from Drake University. IRIS volunteers love to hear from listeners. If you have any comments or questions about this or any IRIS program, please call toll-free from anywhere in Iowa at 877-404-4747. Again, that is 877-404-4747. Since there are no obituaries today, I will be moving on to sports.
Ibrahim presents his own test for Hawkeyes. Iowa City. A new week presents a familiar challenge for the Iowa defense. The Hawkeyes will be facing one of the college football's elite running backs again. Minnesota's Muhammad Ibrahim is the third back who rates among the top five nationally Iowa has lined up against this season. The Hawkeyes held the nation's rushing leader Illinois' Chase Brown to within 2 yards of the current average of 144.2 yards per game 1 week after the fourth leading rusher in college football, Blake Corum of Michigan, was held within 2 yards of his average of 134.9 yards per game. Ibrahim enters Saturday's 3 p.m. game at Huntington Bank Field, averaging 140.1 yards per game, topping 1,000 yards in a season for the third time in his career during the Golden Gophers' 31-3 win over Northwestern last weekend. He carried 36 times on his way to a 178-yard performance against the Wildcats, helping Minnesota do what Minnesota does. Our style of football is to run the ball. Time management is what we pride ourselves on, Ibrahim said. We got up. We understood that we wanted to run the clock. That's what we do best. Ibrahim has helped make that happen while rushing for at least 100 yards in 18 consecutive games, something no running back in the Football Bowl subdivision has accomplished since 2000. Iowa assistant defense line coach Jay Neiman told his players Monday that Ibrahim is a little like water, that if he sees a crack, he'll flow through it. He runs hard, he has great quickness, and cuts fast to the hole, Hawkeye linebacker Seth Benson said. There are a lot of good backs in the Big Ten, and he's up there at the top of the list. With game time temperatures in the Twin Cities to be in the mild teens at round kickoff, the ball will likely end up in Ibrahim's frequently. That's not uncommon in an offense that ranks second in the Big Ten in rushing to Michigan with its average of 220.9 yards per game on ground and leads the conference with 461 carries this season. We know what they like to do, and we know he'll get the ball a lot. We just have to be ready for it, Benson said. That includes sticking with Ibrahim until the play is over. Iowa coach Kirk Finnitz said the 5'10", 210-pound, 6-year senior needs to be defeated until the whistle blows. He's just tough, hard-nosed, Finnitz said. I don't know if he's like a 4.3 guy or anything like that, but he's just a tough football player. Ferrin said while he compares to the Wolverines' Carnum in a number of ways. When it looks maybe there's nothing there, the next you know, he's got a 5-8 yard gain. If you don't tackle him, get him down. He's not quitting, Ferrin said. Ibrahim has returned to action after missing all of Minnesota's opening games in 2021, suffering a torn Italian ligament after rushing for 200 yards in 3 quarters of the Golden Gophers game against Ohio State. The Baltimore native announced within days that he planned to return for his 6th season. He's a really veteran player. Have a lot of respect for him, Ferrin said. The guy's a winner. And as Ibrahim prepares for his final game home, he has Iowa's attention. You have to be aware of where he is on every snap, linebacker Jack Campbell says. The Hawkeyes had a similar situation last weekend when
it faced the only other running back in the Big Ten besides Brown, Kyrum, and Ibrahim, whose average is more than 100 rushing yards per game. Iowa held Wisconsin's Breland Allen to 40 yards on 17 carries, well below a season's average that dropped from 109.9 yards per game to 102.9 yards after being introduced to the Hawkeyes' defense. There are so many good backs in the league this year. It seemed like we're going up against one every week, Campbell said. Each of them is different in their own way, but the challenge is not to let them get comfortable. Campbell said Iowa accomplished that last week against Allen and the Badgers, and now looks forward to the test Ibrahim and the Golden Gophers provide. It's a new week. We have to go out and try to prove ourselves all over again, Campbell said. There is a photo of Minnesota's running back Muhammad Ibrahim shown here competing against Ohio State in Golden Gophers' 2021 season opener, currently averages 140.11 yards per game. Now a segment on college basketball. Deep and talented Revere's batch Bulldogs in home opener. Number 6, Iowa Western continues to build off its hot start as the Revere's beat Concordia JV 131-65 to improve to 4.0 this season. Led by former Revere player Jillian Flores, Bennett taking over this team and leading this team to its fast 4-0 start to the top 10 ranking has been a thrill. It's so special and unique to be sitting in the locker room I once did as a player and now be the coach. First year Revere's coach Jillian Flores Bennett said, "The girls know how much it means to me to be back here, and the bonds and relationships we have here have been so special already, and they're really buying into what we are coaching them to do." On Tuesday night, the Revere's started strong with a 12-2 run to start the game and to take early control. After taking a 13-point lead after the first quarter, the Revere's went on to an early 15-2 run to extend the lead and eventually took a 59-36 lead into halftime and kept rolling in the second half to a 131-65 lead win. Before Tuesday's win, the Revere's defeated Western Wyoming on Saturday 80-67, beat number 18 North Central Missouri 101-72 on November 5th, and beat McCook 99-69 on November 1st. They say it's their deep lineup of players that have played a big part in this early success and believe that they have as good of depth as anyone in the country, which they hope will lead to a big prizes this season. "We think this team is well put together," sophomore guard Alicia Jones says. "We all always playing selfless basketball, looking to make the extra pass. No one cares about who scores more or who gets more minutes or more shots. We all just want to win." Are saying this season BLU up, meaning be locked in under pressure. "We say it every day because every game day we want to come out and be locked in. We just have so much talent on this team," sophomore guard Nidigami added. "Anybody can play well on this team. Everyone plays hard, and I think this is a very special group. I think this team has a lot of good things coming." Nadu led the Revere's with 20 points on Tuesday night, and Jones had 14 points. Notably, five other Revere's scored double digits in Tuesday's win on Hannah Berg scored 17 points, Courtney Fields scored 14, and Cheyenne Schindler's and Isabel Poradovsky scored 10 points each. Jones has scored double figures in all four games thus far, but says it's the bench players that make the difference. Coach Flores Bennett also spoke about the bench play and how it's already helped lead the Revere's to some wins. "We really pride ourselves on being a selfless team," Flores Bennett said. "We have a ton of depth at every position, so if someone is having an off night or is in foul trouble, we know someone is going to step in and step up right away." "We are very excited about the depth this team has, and they are already really buying into this selfless style of basketball. We had some awesome returns to begin with, but then we brought in some key newcomers that have been playing well, and we are really excited for this team, and we think this depth is going to really carry us through this season." Iowa Western will look to keep things rolling as they stay home to play Fort Scott on Friday at 5 p.m. at Revere. There is a photo by Austin Hine, the Daily Nonpareil, that is Revere sophomore Hannah Berg looks to pass the second quarter against Concordia. Berg scored 17 points during Tuesday's win. World Cup prize money disparity an obstacle to equal pay. World Cup prize money continues to be a sticking point for equality in soccer, despite the historic equal pay arrangement between U.S. soccer and its men's and women's teams. World Cup prize money continues to be a sticking point for the equality in soccer despite the historic equal pay agreement between U.S. soccer and its men's and women's teams. Earlier this year, the U.S. national teams decided to split prize money, which means that the haul from playing the sport's most prestigious tournaments will be distributed equally between players for both teams after the federation takes a cut of the top. It was a landmark agreement hailed as the important step for equality even beyond sports, but other nations haven't followed suit. At the heart of the matter is the huge disparity in prize money between the men's and women's tournaments and how it is eventually passed on by federations to their players. FIFA has earmarked $440 million in prize money for this year's Men's World Cup. The winner in the quarter will take home $42 million. The U.S. women won $4 million from a $30 million pot at the 2019 Women's World Cup. FIFA President Gianni Infantino has proposed doubling the prize money for the 2023 event, but the field has expanded from 24 to 32 teams. That could change. FIFA Secretary General Fatima Samora recently suggested that the final prize money total for the women could be greater. Today, the Men's World Cup is the most funding of all FIFA competitions, including the Women's World Cup. But we have seen new trends in terms of revenues, she said at an event in Sydney. Some countries, including Australia, Ireland, Brazil, Norway, and others, have made significant strides towards equal match and appearance fees, but an equal division of pooled World Cup prize money has not been part of those deals. Brazil announced equal pay for its men's and women's teams in 2020, but the agreement pays the women's a proportionally equal amount, or the same percentage, of the World Cup prize money. In July, Spain's federation also agreed to give its female players a percentage of bonuses equal to the men's side, as well as earnings from sponsorships image rights and improved working conditions, it does not reveal specifics. Lisa Delpai Noradi, associate professor of sports management at George Washington University, said there is a three-pronged approach for equal pay. Public sentiment has to be for it. The women have to be unified in their demands, and the players need allies, as in the case of the U.S. men's team. That might be a tough ask in countries like France and Germany, both successful World Cup nations, because the men's teams would give a lucrative payday. France, which won $38 million for winning the 2018 World Cup in Russia, distributed $11 million between the 23 players on the squad. In contrast, the U.S. women have been more successful than the men, winning the last two World Cups. The U.S. men failed to qualify for the 2018 tournament in Russia. If the U.S. women continue to do better than the men, it is not really hurting the men. Even though the men get more, the women can actually contribute just as much if they keep going, Noradi said. But it's not always the same economics in other countries. Those other countries where the men go further in the tournament and thus generate a larger prize pool. So obviously the economics of coupling that with women's would probably be more significantly hurting the men than the women. Players like Alex Morgan, Megan Rapinoe, and Becky Swerbermann tirelessly campaign for pay equity, spurring chance of equal pay at World Cup final 3 years ago in France and gaining public support. Then the women worked with the men's union to forge an agreement, securing both sides a larger share of the overall prize money after the federation's stake. U.S. soccer will take 10% of the money awarded to each team, then split the rest among the 10 players on the two teams' World Cup's rosters. For the 2026 and 2027 tournaments, the USSF will take 20% and split the rest in a similar manner. Australia, which co-hosts the 2023 Women's World Cup, has instead called on FIFA to equalize the prize pool. The Socceroos, as they're known, will get cut of the prize money if the team advances to the knockout round. But the Federation also has plans to put the windfall into a second-tier women's league and a national women's competition. Canada's men, currently in continuous contract talks with the Federation, have asked for 40% of the World Cup's prize money, a friend and family travel package, and an equitable structure with our women's national team that shares the same players' match fees, percentage of prize money earned at our respective FIFA World Cups, and development of women's domestic league. Canada's soccer has been engaged in ongoing discussion with our nation's national team, which are and have always been anchored on our values of fairness and pay equity, addressing previously unbalanced standards. That means dollars, not percentages, Canada Soccer said in a statement. The Federation says there has been progress in the negotiations. For now, at least while FIFA's disparities in prize money exists, getting men's teams on board is what it will likely take for women's teams to win equal pay, said Gina Attanamlio, clinical assistant professor at NYU School of Professional Studies. So how can we get that allyship? Because it is right thing to do, because women's rights and human rights, Attanamlio said. it is, I think, a little bit of a delicate balance to collaborate, but not to pander it. There is a photo of the United States. Megan Rapinoe lifts up the trophy after winning the Women's World Cup final between the U.S. and the Netherlands at Stade de Lyon in Dixines outside Lyon, France in July 7th, 2019. College soccer. Revere's fall Salt Lake CC end of season. Iowa Western men's soccer saw its season come to an end on Tuesday in the NJCAA National Tournament in Melbourne, Florida, after losing to Salt Lake Community College 2-0. Salt Lake netted one goal in the 18th minute when Santiago Delfino found Ty Sanchez. Sanchez added an insurance goal in the 64th minute to seal the win. Iowa Western struggled on offense, mustering only four shots, two of which were on goal. The Bruins, on the other hand, finished five shots on goal. It was a chippy game that featured 24 fouls, 7 yellow cards, and a red card. The Revere's were responsible for 13 fouls, 4 yellow cards, and the red card. Goalkeeper Hector Munoz recorded 3 saves. Iowa Western ends the season with a record of 17-3-1. Rams Cup lands on IR. Los Angeles Rams recovered. Cooper Kupp will have surgery on his sprained right ankle, sidelining the Super Bowl MVP for at least the next 4 weeks while the injuries reserve. Starting left tackle Alaric Jackson will miss the rest of the year because of blood clots, and started right guard Chandler Brewer will be out for the next 6 weeks after knee surgery, coach Gene McCabe said Tuesday while revealing the latest injury setbacks to the defending champions' dismissal season. Cup, the AP offensive player of the last season, after winning the triple crown of receiving, sprained his ankle in the Rams 27-17 loss to Arizona last Sunday. He needs surgery Wednesday that is likely to sideline the Rams' top offensive player for the several weeks, but McVay did not rule out a return this season for his top offensive playmaker. Obviously, you never ever replace a player like Cooper Kupp, McVay said, but we've got to figure out the best way to extenuate the skill set of the guys that will be playing. Kupp currently is the second in the NFL with 75 catches, while his 812-yard receiving and 6 TD receptions are fifth. He was injured when he landed awkwardly after trying to catch a poorly thrown pass from backup quarterback John Wolfhard. Wholesale inflation eases to 8% in the U.S. Washington. Prices at the wholesale level rose 8% in October from a year ago. Still high, but the fourth straight decline at the latest sign that inflation pressures in the United States are easing. The annual figure is down from 8.4% in September on monthly basis. The government said Tuesday that its producer's price index, which measures costs before they reach consumers, rose 0.2% in October since September. That was the same as the previous month, which was revised down from the initial readings of 0.4%. The figures came in lower than economists expected and make it more likely that the Federal Reserve will increase the benchmark interest rate in smaller increments It hiked its short-term rate by 0.75 points for meetings in a row, but the economists now increasingly foresee an increase of 0.5 point in December meeting. And that brings us to the end of today's reading of the Council Bluffs Daily Nonpareil for November 16th. The Nonpareil can be heard each weekday at 3 p.m. Iris volunteers love to hear from listeners. If you have any comments or questions about today's broadcast or any Iris programs, please call the toll-free anywhere in Iowa at 877-404-4747. That number again is 877-404-4747. I'm Josh from Drake University in Des Moines. Thank you for listening.